We good? Okay, so I think we're recording.
Yes, it's just since it's my screen, yeah, it's recording.
Perfect. Good. All right. Hey, folks, welcome to the Battles of the First World War podcast. So the episode title is just a rather pathetic and probably crass attempt at clickbait. But if I have gotten you to click onto this episode, do please stay. Because what follows is, I'm sure, to be an interesting discussion on a now little-known incident that occurred in Henrietta, Oklahoma, during June of 1918. Labeled the Creek Draft Rebellion by sensationalist journalists, a dispute between Creek Nation Native Americans and a local merchant was soon morphed into an anti-government and anti-conscription uprising. With me today is James Gregory on the podcast for a second time to discuss the background of this event. James is a published historian and student currently working on his PhD in history at the University of Oklahoma. So James, welcome. Welcome to the show again. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
And yeah, let's go ahead and let's start off, man. Tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to be interested in World War I in general.
World War I in general, I generally did military history. And to be honest, it was the video games. You know, Battlefield 1 came out and I played it, loved it, and it got me interested in the actual battles. So I started looking into World War I and I just fell into it from there, and opportunities kept coming up and worked my way through. And as I've gone through, obviously I did Marine Corps the last time I talked with you, dealing with some of the Army. And since I'm here, I grew up in Oklahoma. I've got at OU, and my PhD is technically in Native American history. So any opportunity I get, I'll try to morph the two. So Native Americans and World War I was a big focus, which is where this article and discussion came up.
Excellent. Okay. So tell us where the Creek Draft Rebellion, where this happened in the U.S. Like, what is the area like today? And then what was it like back in 1918?
Henrietta is where it occurred, and technically a little south of Henrietta. It's in the Creek Nation, kind of on the eastern part of the state, southeastern area. It, like most little towns in Oklahoma, they popped up as like a mining town, coal, oil, natural gas, boomed for a little bit and then fell away. So Henrietta is the same. This was just an area where the Creek Nation had been put on their reservation. So high population of Muscogee Creeks. So this is just the eastern side of the state.
Okay. Is Henrietta on a Creek reservation technically or no?
It is part of the Creek Nation. Henrietta is part of the Creek Nation, yes.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. All right. So right here, you're already presenting a pretty powerful newspaper headline. And for folks listening to the podcast, so James is presenting a headline that says 200 Creeks go on warpath over drafting of youths, three whites rumored killed. And this was printed on June 6th, 1918. So by that point, June of 1918, America's pretty well embroiled in fighting on the Western Front. In fact, June 6th, as you noted, was the first day of the Battle of Belleau Wood. So, you know, American boys are over there fighting. The nation is very much wrapped up in the Great War. And then comes this headline. So how did you learn about the Creek Draft Rebellion, and what led you to look further into the events surrounding that?
Well, there's really only a few books written about Native Americans in World War I, and Dr. Thomas Britton had written his book, and then he wrote an article for the Chronicles of Oklahoma, the local state historical journal. And his article was on the Creek Draft Rebellion, and I thought it was interesting, and I read it. And I figured as I went through, I kept wondering, well, what actually happened? And he never really seemed to answer the question. And I think I have. Yeah. So here's the beginning of his article. Wartime hysteria, Indian baiting, and World War I Oklahoma. But he never actually tells you what happened in Henrietta. And when I checked the sources, he didn't look at any local sources. He was looking at the bigger picture of the Bureau of Indian Affairs and going off the idea that this happened and then why or what happened after. But I was more curious and, well, why did it happen? And what do we actually know? And so the way I approached it was looking at the local sources and what did the locals say happened. And then I discovered that, in fact, it didn't happen. I mean, the article that we just saw here ran on June 6th. The event, quote-unquote event, happened on June 5th. So by the time the headlines ran, it was started and over, right? There was nothing going on. So when I wrote my article for that class is looking at the myth, essentially. How did this get so ingrained? And I mentioned there's actually several books who have noted the Creek Draft Rebellion, and they use it as an example of Native American work against World War One, but it never actually happened. So all these people are using an example that doesn't exist. And I was really curious as to how that happened and why we talk about it.
Interesting. So according to newspaper articles published at the time, what was the Creek Draft Rebellion?
According to the local papers, which, and I'm sorry for those of you listening, for those who see the video, there's a picture here of the site, the Hickory Stomping Grounds. But I have an article from Henrietta, and this is the article the locals said, and all they tell is it's a phony story about a draft uprising that would curl your hair if it were true. What the local paper actually says happened was it was a meeting of Creeks, and now there's some discussion. The articles like to blame if it was African Americans, but with the Creek Nation, there's a history of freedmen in the Creek Nation. So were they actually African Americans, or were they black freedmen, which meant they were part Creek? You know, there's a weird discussion. So they don't really agree. But it seems like they were meeting there for just a discussion of tribal affairs. And during this meeting, they were going to go grab some food from the local general store. And when they got there, they wanted to buy flour, but they couldn't because they needed a flour card by the Food Administration. And they didn't know about it, because it hadn't even been announced yet. It wasn't announced until June 6th, the next day, that they needed the cards. Okay. So they were obviously frustrated about this, and they got into an argument with the owner of the general store. And basically, they told him, you know, if you don't sell it to us, then we're going to come back and take it by force. And Fowler, the guy who owned the general store, he wasn't happy about that. So he, you know, told them go away. So they left and they went back to the assembly, and now they're upset because they can't even buy flour due to the war. And it's a key here to point out that the Native American approach to this is the draft. The draft is for citizens. Now, not all Native Americans are citizens at this time. There's right. A weird, complicated history with it. If the reservation lands, the tribal lands were allotted, then with allotment comes citizenship, but not all tribes allotted. The Creek Nation even had its own special policy where they weren't citizens. So you have this issue of everyone has to register for the draft, but you're asking Native Americans to register for a draft for a country they're not even citizens of. And so there's a lot of argument there as who should we even register? Do we have to register? So, you know, they come back to this meeting and now they're distraught at government policies not letting them have food. So it would stand to reason that their grievances naturally kind of progress where they got upset. There was one Creek they interviewed who said, you know, they were complaining about, we give to the Red Cross, we buy Liberty Bonds, our men go to war, and we are refused flour and we can't even vote. You know, we're not citizens. So this discussion just expanded. So now you've got some disgruntled Creek men and women and children at this gathering. And then you've got these terrified local farmers who see a gathering of Native Americans and they hear some discontent and they know about this disagreement over flour, and they run and say, hey, the Creeks are angry. There's an uprising. We need help out here. And so then the story blows up, and the article I wrote went in more detail about, you know, local racism basically towards Native Americans and the idea of just a group of natives outside a reservation is want for worry of white settlers. So that's what actually happened. It was just a tribal meeting, a disagreement over flour, and some natural grievances and discussion with each other. That's all that happened.
So it sounds like the issue of buying flour from the local merchant and the need to basically have like a ration card that had just been announced. That's mm-hmm. It seems like it was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back with, yeah. You know, with local grievances. Now, if I want to back up just a little bit about this, can you talk a little bit more about allotment and what allotted land? Like, what does that actually mean? Like, that's.
And unfortunately, I should be much better versed at this.
I'm sorry, man. I threw this one at you.
No, in the general sense, I mean, it's an important topic. In the general sense, you've got reservation land.
Okay.
And therefore, the government's, you know, giving them reservation land. Well, and then
when that belongs, and reservation land belongs exclusively to like the Creek Nation.
Yeah. Okay. But then when you have the periods of white settlers moving in, what you have is the U.S. government pushing these nations to allot their land. So basically they say, we're no longer going to do a group ownership. We're going to give each person an allotted space of land. This is your land. But with that, they do the number system, right? So we have 1,000 people, you all get 10 acres each. Well, if they now have an extra 4,000 acres after they've done that, then the government opens it up for white settlement. Okay. So that's the idea of allotment. And obviously allotment's a big issue with Native Americans losing land and white settlers moving in and taking land. And again, it wasn't all perfect. So allotment also meant citizenship, which was a part of it. But then some nations would change the treaties or they'd work around it where they weren't citizens. So it was a weird discussion and unfortunately a big part of the issue of the area. So local grievances with the Creeks not trusting the government already with their history makes perfect sense. They've already got natural grievances against the U.S. government.
Right.
And the settlers nearby already have grievances with the Creeks and the history. I'm not sure if you had a question on like the local background.
Yeah, I did. So it's a little kind of moving down. It was like, the question is, what was the perception of the Creek Nation Native Americans amongst local whites? And then what's the history of relations between the two groups out here in Oklahoma? And of course, I gave you a three-parter here, like who was, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, is who was Chito Harjo?
Okay, yeah, I think this one would be the best one to bring up first because it lays out the entire story.
Sure.
This article even says it, you know, it meant farcical, crazy snake rebellion. So you have to remember in the area, you've already got a history of Creek and white issues.
Okay.
So you've got the allotment, you have that process, but you've also got a history of uprising. So you have the crazy snake uprising, which in itself is apparently the same instance as this. It never actually happened where crazy snake was involved. He just got blamed for it. And so that's a different story altogether. Yep. But it's in the same area, actually, that the old Hickory Stomping Grounds where this took place, the crazy snake uprising took place. And the crazy snake uprising was basically in 1909. And Crazy Snake and his followers attempted to pass laws to stop the allotment process. And they were, so his followers were called snakes. The issue turned out to be, they were also like freedmen and local outlaws that all got together. So they were using the moment to attack local settlers and steal their stuff. And that got blamed on the crazy snake or crazy snake and his followers. And so the papers all freaked out over the crazy snake uprising and these Creeks are attacking white farmers, and then a posse went out there and there was a shootout and several people were killed. Crazy Snake escaped and fled. So you already have the local people afraid because they had this Crazy Snake uprising.
Okay.
And that's in the same area. And then you have to remember that in Oklahoma, there's already a problem because in 1917, there's the Green Corn Rebellion. And the Green Corn Rebellion was Native Americans, but also white farmers, rebelling against the draft because they didn't want to register for the draft because then it would leave their wives and children to tend to the farm while they're gone.
Both Native Americans and white farmers.
Yeah, it was only like two counties over from where Henrietta is. So it's not even far from that. So you had the Green Corn Rebellion in 1917, and that actually did lead to armed conflict. And they, you know, planned on burning several bridges, and then a local army got together and went and killed and attacked the rebels, and then they got arrested and sentenced. So you've already got a history. You've got the Crazy Snake Uprising not 10 years earlier, and then you've got the Green Corn Rebellion in 1917. So now you've got all these local fears of Native Americans uprising on the same spot that happened before and on the same discussion of the draft that happened the year before. So there's already a history of everyone not trusting each other, especially white settlers not trusting a group of angry Native Americans together, especially the Creeks, because they always blame the Creeks for doing something.
Wow. Okay. So
even Henrietta, this newspaper I've got here, they say it's a farcical Crazy Snake Rebellion. Even they knew it didn't happen. But the reporters really wanted something. This is another article, Salt Lake Telegram from August 5th. This is talking about the Green Corn Rebellion, but it's bringing up Crazy Snake and that outbreak and basically blaming journalists. There was no bloodshed like the journalists claimed there was, but journalists in the East really wanted a good bloody story of Native Americans and uprising. And sure. Of course, by this time period, right, Native Americans are no longer the Indian Wars. There's no Great War. This is a new generation, but people still want that in their newspaper. They still want to read about these fights between white settlers and Native Americans. So a lot of issues all came together for this Creek Draft Rebellion locally.
Okay. Now, at the center on the old, is it just the Hickory Stomping Grounds? I apologize.
Yeah, the term I see is Old Hickory Stomping Grounds, Hickory Stomping Grounds. I've seen all both sides.
So at the supposed center of all of this with the Creek Draft Rebellion, at the Old Hickory Stomping Grounds on June 5th of 1918 was a woman, Creek Nation, a woman named Ellen Perryman. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
So Ellen Perryman is an interesting character. She had a little history fighting for Creek rights, being an outspoken person against the U.S. government with the Creeks. She was at the stomping grounds, and when the reporter and the home guard showed up, they interviewed her, and she went off and started cussing at them and telling them how worthless they were. And the reporter wrote all this down, and he blamed that she was doing a speech and riling them all up to say anti-draft sentiments. But if you look at other review or other affidavits and interviews with the other Creeks that were there, they actually say she never said anything. She was planning on it, but it never happened.
Okay.
Which is part of the problem of like Thomas Britton's article is the fact that he does blame her for saying something at the event, but it turned out she didn't say anything. She was just wanting to. So Ellen becomes like the main blame. The local government blames her for starting this draft uprising. And then they start spinning wild stories as it goes into that she's working with the Germans and the Germans are paying her. And then that expands into a Bureau of Indian Affairs does an entire investigation and then manhunt to find the woman. And they finally catch her like in December, but the war's over. So they release her. And you need to remember, you know, at this period, you've got the Sedition Act. So, you know, it's illegal to speak out like this. So they're really trying to nail it down. And punish her for this. But Perryman, by all accounts, really, she didn't do anything at that time. She didn't do anything June 5th. Now, later she did. But on June 5th, she didn't do anything. She just rattled off at the mouth to a reporter because she was angry.
Right.
Which I think is the other part of that. You know, what happened? Nothing. They were meeting. They were mad. But when the white settlers, the white farmers ran to town and warned of an uprising, the Henrietta Home Guard armed themselves and rushed out there in vehicles to stop this uprising. And when they show up, it's the middle of the night, they start firing their weapons, scatter the women and children. And, you know, what do they find? 30 men standing there with no weapons. There's no uprising. So there was violence only on the side of the Home Guard. And so here's another article from Texas, Oklahoma Home Guard called out to quell Indian anti-draft riots. Whites arm, prepare for battle with red men. Right, this is what people were seeing. But in reality, the Home Guard showed out, started firing their weapons, and scared all the Creeks. So now Ellen is upset because you have all these white men showing up with guns, scaring people. And then they come into her house and they want to interview her and find out what happened. So she's angry. She's spouting off all this rhetoric, you know, that she thinks they're all a bunch of sons of bitches is her words.
Right.
And she would wipe her ass with the American flag. These very angry statements.
Right.
Which is actually it makes sense because the next morning she sent a telegram asking for help because these white men showed up with weapons and were breaking up their peaceful meeting. So in reality, there's a second part there, too, that all these white men showed up with weapons, and they were the ones who were aggressive and violent, not the Creeks. Yet the stories get sensationalized to make it the Creeks.
So you now, my next question here kind of, so I know, like, was there ever any evidence of pro-German sentiment or collaboration out in Oklahoma? I would, you know,
well,
nothing. I would imagine if, like, the Germans might be more focused on, like, maybe blowing up ships out in, like, New York
right.
Harbor or something, but
that's the issue here. No, there's no evidence of it. But again, you've got the Green Corn Rebellion the year before.
Yep.
And what is, and you know, it's not pro-German, but it's anti-draft, so people will assume. But Oklahoma also has this really bad history with the councils of defense that were formed in the towns. Okay. And they were like, they were way too aggressive. And they would attack people they thought had German sentiments. Farmers who wouldn't plow their fields or grow food for war bonds or people who didn't pay enough. They would drag, you know, Stillwater, Oklahoma, they would drag them into town and shave their beards and paint them yellow in the middle of town.
Wow.
In Tulsa, one man, he killed another man because the guy said, I hope all American soldiers that go overseas are killed. And so this guy shot him 3 times, killed him, turned himself into police, and then he was released with justifiable homicide. Wow. Because of the man's statement. So there was already like this history and fear of German sedition in the local area, plus, you know, German immigrants, et cetera. But there's no like, there's no evidence to say that Ellen Perryman had any German connection. Now, they tried to make it that way. The Bureau of Indian Affairs tried to look into her story that she was in D.C. meeting with, you know, German ambassadors, and they were trying to start rebellion in the Creek Nation. But there's no evidence whatsoever.
Okay. Now, she was actually, I read in Britain's article that she had actually gone to D.C. She went to D.C. to argue for a pension for her father, who supposedly mm-hmm. was a Civil War veteran, of which there's very little evidence to prove that.
There's several stories of why she went there. There's that story, okay. And then there's the argument that they were even at that Hickory Ground with a discussion to found a Grand Army of the Republic Hall.
Okay.
But then, you know, she also claims that she went to D.C. And this part, I want to believe this was a joke on her part, but she said she went to go meet with a guy named Filipinos, who was a Filipino. And she was there talking with him and discussing, we don't want to be in the draft, what can we do? But then she also later claimed she was there as a translator for a Creek meeting. So her statements make no sense. There's so many stories of why she was in D.C.
Okay.
At least this is the early part. Now, later, she goes back to D.C. and she's angry because of what happened. But at the beginning, no, there's nothing there. And there's no one really knows why she was in D.C. And a lot of them just kind of blamed it that she was crazy because she would just change her statement and she would just go off and say these wild things when she was upset. So I don't know why Ellen Perryman was there, but she proved to be a very good scapegoat.
Okay. I have to say, like, I might need to up my critical reading skills a little bit because I just now understood like what you said with the Philip Enos thing. I was like, oh my God, how did you like not see that? Like, but it's either a huge coincidence or
yeah, I don't know. The reports just call him Philip Enos, a Filipino. And part of me really thinks that was a joke on her part, that she was messing with the reporter. And I hope so, but that's right. Who she claimed she was meeting.
So. Right. Oh my goodness. Okay. So now Perryman, now, like you mentioned, she is arrested, in December of 1918. They finally, this 6-month manhunt, this woman, they finally catch her in Oklahoma. But what happens to her after she is arrested?
They release her because the war is over. This happens in June. She's angry, whatever. And I think we'll get to him, but the guy who really is to blame, Jack Carter, the reporter who started all this, he makes these statements that she claimed all these things. Well, the local police decide that they should probably arrest this woman. And I have an image of her for those with the video. Wow. They want to arrest this woman. And so they start looking for her. Well, now if she wasn't paranoid before, she is now, because these men have already shown up at the event with weapons and now there's a manhunt for her. So she goes on the run and she goes to DC back and forth. And they keep trying to find her. But this seems to like, if she wasn't paranoid already, she really becomes paranoid because then she starts claiming that the Council of Defense came in and poisoned all the water around the stomping grounds and there's men trying to kill her. So now she's got a guard of like 50 Creeks that are with her all the time. She becomes, which rightfully so, there's a manhunt for her, but she becomes paranoid that there's all of these horrible things happening, which again, no, they didn't poison anything. There's no evidence of that, but to her, it happened. And then with that, she starts getting angry. So now the BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs, does their investigation after the first initial event. And they find that, you know, she didn't really say anything. You know, she got blamed for it and she was angry, rightfully so, but she's a nice woman and we don't think she's a danger. And then at the end of the investigation, she writes a letter saying all Creeks should not register for the draft. And they get a hold of this letter and now they think, well, great. Now she is opposing the draft.
Oh, okay.
So they open up a second manhunt to find her. And then they keep tracking her down. And then they catch her in December, but the war is already over. So the Sedition Act and everything else is over. So they then release her. And then she goes on her way and she really doesn't have too much of like a remarkable life after that. So there was a whole manhunt. And she basically became what they accused her of being.
I see.
So when it was their, you know, it's their fault. They pushed her to the edge and made her paranoid and made her angry. So now she is what they feared. But, and unfortunately, historians look at that and say, look, she is that person. But if you back it up to the actual day, June 5th, she wasn't that person then, and she wasn't doing anti-draft work then. So that's what happened to Ellen. But yeah, she gets arrested and then released. And the BIA seemed to, their justification for such a long manhunt was to like uphold their take that Native Americans support the war, and therefore they can't allow something like this to happen. And I mentioned to you that there was another man, a Creek named Washington Perryman, who was, I don't know if he was related to her. I couldn't find anything to prove he was related to her, but he was from the Creek Nation. He lived not too far up the road from Henrietta, and he was killed at the Battle of Blancmont Ridge, which I know you just did your podcast on not too long ago. So there, the Creek Nation has men who are serving in the U.S. Army and have died in the U.S. Army. So there's really no actual anti-army, anti-war sentiment within the Creeks. And as my criticism of Britain not using local sources goes, the Henrietta paper, after this happened, a bunch of Creek men got together and held like a loyalty meeting where they all did and talked about the war and supporting the war and such. So the members of the community in the Creek Nation went out of their way to prove their loyalty, because these newspapers have made them look like they're all against the draft and all against the country. And that's not the truth.
So were there lasting repercussions for the Creek Nation Native Americans in the Henrietta area?
No, nothing. This unfortunate event becomes Jack Carter, who we'll discuss. He started it, and all the things he was afraid of, essentially, it created. Now, with the sentiment with the Creeks, there was no evidence of anything. Like I said, they were holding these loyalty meetings. They were still supporting the war effort, and Native Americans supported the war effort a whole lot, looking at their at home and in the war. There were Native Americans in all the divisions, not all, but, you know, all over. So nothing like that. But you have Ellen becoming what they feared she was. Mm-hmm. There was repercussions with the Germans. They believed, oh no, there's anti-German sentiments, the Germans' fault. But there's no evidence. Well, it turned out the New York Times ran the article, right here, Creek Indians rise against the draft, three whites reported killed in Oklahoma. So the New York Times runs this article. Well, the next month, Germany had this propaganda newspaper called America in Europe, a paper published in the interest of good fellowship among all nations. And they would drop it on the Allied lines, and the articles in there are talking about, American losses are supposed to demoralize the Allies. Well, in July 29th, the Germans run this article in their newspaper, saying the Creek Indians in revolt. According to the New York Times, the tribe of the Creek Indians refused to allow their young men to enter the United States Army. They are in open revolt. Three white men are reported to be killed in Oklahoma. So now they originally feared German propaganda, but what the American journalists create is German propaganda. So it's what they were afraid of, they created. And so the Germans now started using it for their own reasons. And this, once the Germans did this, the Bureau of Indian Affairs saw it. And to them, it confirmed that they were right the whole time, that she did have German connections. And so that started the second manhunt. But they're creating the things that they believe. So it's this really weird issue that blew out of proportion, and then everyone just, it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. A crazy snowball effect here.
Yeah. And it's their fault, right? It's nothing to do with the Creek Nation, nothing to do with Ellen Perryman. It's the reporters and the U.S. government that created the issue.
Now, obviously like the Germans reported it, the New York Times reported it. And, we've talked about, that, nothing really happened at the Creek Draft Rebellion. And of course, this line of three white farmers, three white men reported killed, like obviously no one was killed. There was simply the home guard, like you said, fired shots into the air. Mm-hmm. So zero casualties. So a lot of this sounds like, some pretty good sensationalism going on. Was there pushback against this story? You've already shown that even on June 6th, the day after, the local paper was already saying this is a farce. This is nothing happened here. So can you talk a little bit about pushback against the mm-hmm. sensationalism? And I guess it's time to bring in, Jack Carter, the main guy.
Yeah, we can talk about them. Of course, out of your whole podcast, this is the one battle that didn't happen, had no casualties. And yet, if you were to believe the papers, if you lived in New York City, you would just be seeing this article. So pushback comes from a man named Jack Carter. Jack Carter was a local journalist, and he was in Henrietta that night when the farmer comes running in, warning everyone that the Creeks are in an uprising. And as the home guard got together and preparing, he wired several, not just one, he wired several different newspapers and said, I have this story. This is what's happening. And he wants money to go do this story. So, of course, they want the story. So he goes out there with the group, and he's the one who goes into the house of a man named Jeff Francis, and he interviews Ellen Perryman. So he's the one who's dealing with Ellen, and he records that Perryman was very crude against him, right? She's angry. All these white men just showed up with guns and scattered their meeting. And so she basically tells him, and I apologize to your viewers, but I'm going to read her words. He says she severely attacked the government, and she referred to soldiers as yellow-legged sons of bitches. And then Carter, and this is Carter's words, Carter claims that she said, to hell with the United States, damn President Wilson, and I would not wipe my ass on the Stars and Stripes. So he writes that Perryman was the leader of these gathered Creeks, and she's preaching anti-U.S. sentiments, and so it's her fault that everything started. Even though Francis, the one who was there, he's the one who says Perryman did not make any speech, but it seems she might have intended to, but she never actually did. So Carter, goes back to town, and he writes up his story of this rebellion led by anti-government Creek woman, and he sends it out to various newspapers. Now, this is the issue. He doesn't just send it to one newspaper. He sends it to several, trying to rake in all the money he can. Okay. So this issue now means that all these different groups have his story, and as journalists tend to do, things get exaggerated. And for those that aren't watching the video, it'll say 200 Creeks. My favorite's up in Connecticut. This story ran in Norwich, Connecticut, and it said 700 Creek Indians have taken refuge in the hills. So the numbers go wild. There's hundreds and hundreds of armed Creeks. He writes there were shots fired and men have been killed and blah, blah, blah. So all these other newspapers around the country are reporting that the Creeks are in an uprising. There's firing. They've killed white farmers. And the home guard's out there having a pitched battle with these rebellious Creeks. But in reality, Carter just made it all up. And his popularity, the article of popularity, really played off of everything we already talked about. It played off the local fears of dissent, local fears of another Creek uprising, fears of another violent draft uprising.
Right.
But then it also played into the U.S. media's want for more writings about Native American uprisings. I think I have an article here from the Tulsa Democrat. Now, this is in 1917, okay. But the Tulsa Democrat said, inasmuch as the Belgian commissioners want to see some real Indians when they visit Tulsa, it is a pity that old Geronimo has gone to the happy hunting ground and that Crazy Snake no longer puts on uprisings to thrill the yellow journalists. So there was this understanding that journalists wanted these uprisings and this violence to be a part of it. So they are all happy to print Carter's article. And this is actually kind of my big argument against it, is that you're reading national articles, but the locals understand what's actually happening, and the locals don't actually believe Carter. So for fallback on him, even though this article runs all over the country, he ends up pretty much losing all credibility because of what he did. When he sent it in, some people would check him, but some people would not check him. So if they're not checking his work, then there's no big deal. The Henrietta local paper said, you know, some correspondent copped out a few dimes and gave us undesirable publicity. So they were recognizing this man was just making things up, and nothing happened. Jerry Rand, who ran the Muskogee Phoenix, and Muskogee's the biggest town in the Creek Nation, he got sent the article, and Jerry read Carter's statement, and Rand also reported to the Bureau of Indian Affairs that Carter had a very unreliable reputation in his manner of reporting news. So he already had a reputation of not doing it properly and making things up. And so when he received that article from Carter, Rand like toned it down because, and in his words, you know, he's lived in Oklahoma long enough not to be misled by wild stories of Indian uprisings. So the locals knew that this was not something that actually happened. Unfortunately, since he sent it to everybody, all these different newspapers just rolled with it. So Jerry Rand, you know, told Carter, we will never publish an article from you again after it all blew up. So Carter did like an affidavit later on of what Ellen said, but it would have been very exaggerated, and it conflicted with earlier reports he had made. So he lost all credibility. Newspapers that understood him, they no longer published his work. So he started it. He's the cause of the uprising. And so he really got the fallback because his reputation's gone. But you could also argue that the Creek Nation then suffered this incident as an embarrassment. The Bureau of Indian Affairs took it as an embarrassment and did that whole manhunt for Ellen. Right. So all these people, there were all this violence and then arrests and manhunts and all these things, all because one reporter decided that he wanted a good uprising story. And unfortunately, without looking into the local stuff, if you were to just research Indian uprisings, Creek Draft Rebellion is going to pop up in everything you see. So it's a word to the wise of, you know, as Britain says, Indian baiting. You shouldn't believe everything you read in the newspapers just because it's been said. In reality, it didn't exist. So that was the big fallback on Carter himself. But then you got to think of the locals, and then you have to think of Oklahoma, and then you have to you know, everyone that was a victim of his exaggeration.
Right.
And technically, I guess you could make the argument that all historians today that have written about it, they're suffering from the fallout because they saw it as something that actually happened, and it didn't.
Now, this was just to bring like a little context as well. Like you mentioned about, you know, the past history between Native Americans and you know, local white settlers, and you know, already there was a lot of like tension, some tension between them. There had been these the Chito Harjo, the smoked meat rebellion, and everything, the green corn rebellion. Now, this was, and correct me if I'm wrong, so we're talking like, you know, this is 1918. So the Civil War is just barely 50 years, you know, it's just 50 years behind the United States. The Creek Nation, they had actually kind of split, right? Like some Creek Nation men had fought for the Union, others had fought for the Confederacy. And then, of course, you've got like you said, like the Indian Wars of the 1870s, and that myth of like, you know, the you know, and just to use the words of the time, you know, like the savages, you know, coming out to attack, you know, everyone. And so you have this imagery that obviously the newspapers seem to really enjoy, because it provides for good copy for them. Mm-hmm. Now did World War One, like, did that change perceptions of the Native American amongst other Americans, you know, especially Caucasian Americans? Like, did that idea of the Plains Indian fighting white settlement, did that change with Native American participation in battles and in the military?
I would definitely say, as the way I see it, is World War One is kind of like the bridge. World War One is the bridge between the Indian savage and the Native American ally, right? We've ended the Indian Wars, and there's a few incidents that happen afterwards, but we're no longer in that part. And so, you know, if you think about it, the United States, our enemy is the Native American. And then sometimes they're an ally, you know, with the Apache scouts, right? And then when you have the Spanish-American War, the U.S. government kind of adopts the language they used against Native Americans towards the Filipinos. But then after that, you still have this weird instance where they're not citizens. They're here, but they're not all citizens. So people that are serving in World War One, Native Americans, I mean, hell, Dr. Britton, Thomas Britton, in his book has one of them. His grandfather, the Native American soldier, he was in the U.S. Army in World War One. His grandfather had fought against Custer at the Battle of Little Bighorn. So, like, you have this new generational thing. These men who are joining the U.S. Army, their grandfathers had fought against the U.S. Army.
Right.
So World War One became the bridge to take us into this new ideology of what Americans, white Americans, thought of Native Americans. World War One brought them from an ally to an American soldier. They're no longer just a scout. They are now an American soldier. Plus, culturally, it allowed them to celebrate, bring back cultural dances in Anadarko here in Oklahoma. There were several big powwows when they came back, and they were doing traditional dances that had been banned 20 years prior by the U.S. government. But now they're doing them to celebrate Native American soldiers who just fought for the U.S. Army. So it became a way for them to bring back some of their culture, some of their rituals, their customs, but also morph that into the patriotism and work they had done in the war. And moving on, 1924, I might be wrong, or 27, they give all Native American citizenship. And one of the big arguments for it is service rendered in World War One. Not only those who fought, but the reservations, they're still doing war bonds. They're doing liberty bonds. They're doing Red Cross drives. So all the women and children, the men back home, are also supporting the war of a country they technically aren't citizens of.
Right.
So World War One made Native Americans, it brought a new image. And the Creek Draft Rebellion is kind of like the last dying grasp of the media trying to portray an uprising, because there's no uprisings after this. There's no reports of Native Americans going on a rebellion in Oklahoma or somewhere. That pretty much is squashed. But this is the last breath effort of portraying Native Americans as our enemy. Because after this, you go into the war, and then, you know, Native American participation in World War II, Vietnam, etc. We're no longer, they're just American citizens now. We don't think of them as the enemy.
Right.
So that's a big one with it. And I think the big reason for the whole manhunt for Ellen is to prove that no, Native Americans support the U.S. Army. This is just an oddball. This isn't something we should consider the whole. So World War One, I think, is very significant in at least cultural ideas of Native Americans to the white population, especially when you've got, you know, these people in Henrietta that are so afraid of seeing a group of Creeks that they instantly think something bad's going to happen.
Right.
There's automatically violence. And that kind of gets squashed after the war and when you support it. Plus, you know, you've got the tribes in Oklahoma are buying monuments of doughboys and they're putting their lists. So it's a really big, significant moment for Native Americans themselves, not only culturally, but just society-wise in the area.
Fascinating. James, thank you for bringing this this incident to my attention a few months ago. As I said, I'm slow as cold molasses getting to things. But this has been a fascinating discussion. Like, so, you know, quite obviously, folks, again, there was no World War I battle on American soil. It's
no,
just a crap title that I thought I was being witty with. Again, fascinating topic. Like,
a disappointing battle you've covered in your podcast.
I hope this is my most disappointing one. So
disappointing battle, but in the bigger context, especially since you just did Blancmont with the 36th Division and
right.
the Native American participation, this is, there's the other side, there's the American side. And what battles are they fighting at home?
Right.
In the same context. So I think it's an important discussion to have. And even though there was no bloodshed and there was no violence and didn't actually occur, it's amazing to see what battle they did fight.
Right. And no, and I appreciate it. That's why I appreciate the idea, because having just talked about Blancmont with, members of the 36th Division, which were men from Texas and Oklahoma National Guard units who fought at Blancmont and beyond. I think this is a great way to kind of like round out some of the background. So this is so great. Yeah, so I appreciate it.
If I'd thought about it, Washington Perryman might have been part of the 36th Division.
Okay.
Since he was killed at Blancmont, he might have been part of the 36th Division. So a local boy, Creek, who died, might have been part of your discussion from the last one.
Wow. There we go. Wow. All right. Well, thank you so much, James. Again, thank you so much. This is for you folks listening, we're recording this on a Sunday afternoon. So thanks for taking some part out of your weekend. Although I know I am very helpfully delaying your grading papers. So
that's all right.
So, well, I appreciate it. And looking forward to your other projects that we'll have you on here again in the future. So thank you so much for coming on. I hope you have a good rest of your afternoon.
Yeah, you too.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.